Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Introduce Steve Bell.
Well, he's now executive director of the Bipartisan Policy Center and sort of helped write the Bible of this entire debate over the debt limit. It's called, it has a sexy title, Debt Limit Analysis, but that's what you'd expect from somebody in the trenches. Stephen, thank you very much for being with us this morning. What I would like to start with is to have you define the debt limit and what this is all about. The new poll out by the National Journal today, I found fascinating. 73% of Republicans think that raising the debt ceiling means that Congress can go back and spend more money in the future. 56% of Democrats think the same thing. People don't get this, do they?
Oh, no, thank you for having me. They don't get it. And it's not that complicated, but it's something that in the past the American people have said, look, we hire Congress and other people to do this. We're trying to take care of our daily lives and go about our business. So on something like this, let's let Congress do it. The problem now, Congress isn't doing it, and the public is really not able to understand the debt limit. It's very simple. We run up debts. We have to pay the bills when they come due. It isn't new debts that we're accumulating in the future when we pass a debt limit. It is us saying we will honor the bills we have already run up. Right now, that debt limit is $16.7 trillion, which is about the same size as the entire national economy is, about 100% of what we call gross domestic product. Now, that's a very dangerous level, and the debt is going up, even though deficits temporarily are going down. It doesn't mean, when we pass a debt limit increase, that we've authorized new spending. What it means is we will pay the bills that we already owe for spending that happened in the past.
Well, does that that takes us to when does that happen? When do we run through the debt? The Secretary of the Treasury has said October 18th, but it's not really that.
No, and anyone who tells you that he or she knows the exact date, even in Treasury, is probably not telling you the truth. Here's what happens. Sometime between the 18th of October and the end of October, Treasury will run out of money, cash on hand, literally cash on hand, and won't be able to pay some or all the bills that come in, let's say, on a Tuesday. Now, when that happens, they will be in default on a bill from Johnny's warehouse that is a contractor, or Lockheed Martin, which is a contractor, or in some cases they won't pay salaries to government workers because they don't have the money to do so. And that's what we call the X date. Now, Jack Lew, the Secretary of Treasury, sent out a letter saying that on the 17th of this month, he will have exhausted all the internal borrowing he can do. We call it extraordinary measures, but what it is borrowing from pension funds and stuff. He will run out of that money, and he will have only $30 billion cash on hand. Now the question is, well, how long will that last? Our estimate is somewhere between the 23rd of October and the 30th of October, he will run out of money.
When you run out of money with the sophistication of our federal government, is it like we run out of money when we go to the ATM and it says there's nothing in it?
Oh, yes. It's precisely what it is.
It's precisely like they literally don't have an ATM card that works.
That's correct. It's computerized like an ATM card, in fact. A computer at the Department of Labor contacts at the computer at Treasury, sends in a bill and says this is the right order number and this is the right number for payment, and the Treasury computer writes back, sorry, can't pay it.
What would you
say? They do that 3 to 5 million times a day, by the way.
Your great mentor is Pete DeBenesi of New Mexico, and with all of his budget work and such. I mean, besides the fact he played in the Brooklyn Dodgers organization, he was quite a guy. But the answer is,
he was a leader. Yeah.
He was a leader. That's right where my question is. Where are the Pete DeBenesis today?
You know, that question's been asked a lot, and I've been his friend for 40 years, and You know, he had a lot of help. He had Howard Baker, the majority leader. He had Bob Dole. He had people like that. But fundamentally, people on both sides of the aisle trusted when Senator Domenici said, this is the number, they trusted him.
But Steve Bell, where is John Boehner's Howard Baker? That's what I'm asking.
There isn't one, and that's the truth. The process is not broken, and that's what I try to emphasize to people. What is broken is the fact that we are electing more and more of the far left and the far right to Congress, and it has become extremely polarized. You know, Domenici and Dole were talking recently, and Dole said to Domenici, you know, Pete, I don't think I could win the nomination back in Kansas if I ran now for the Senate. And Domenici said, I don't think I could either in New Mexico. You got to think about that. There's 70 years of Senate leadership saying we probably couldn't get nominated. Yeah.
That's a little scary. Well, we got to ask what happens after those computers write back and say there's no money. So then, Steve,
we choose.
Yeah. What do they do then? Do they choose? Can we choose? I had a big argument with former budget director Dave Stockman on Bloomberg Surveillance. He says, yeah, they just pick and choose what bills they want to pay.
Well, you know, David and I go back a long, long ways, almost 35 years, and so I respect his judgment a lot, but I've got to disagree with him on this. There is no legal authority for the Treasury to say, I'm going to pay Social Security, but I'm not going to pay salaries for government workers. And so they have told us that absent that kind of authority, they will not pay any bills, let's say, that come in on a Monday. Let's say they have $2 billion cash on hand and $10 billion worth of bills come in on that Monday. They won't pay the first $2 billion in. That's prioritization. What they say they will do is they will wait Tuesday and, or perhaps Wednesday, till they actually get the entire $10 billion on hand and then pay all of Monday's bills at once. Now, you would say to me, that can't go on very long, and you would be exactly right. That has a very short half-life, and I'm afraid that this talk of prioritization, this talk of how we get out of this mess, forgets one important thing. We've never been here before. And the question is, why are we here now, and do we want to be here now, and when will stuff start hitting the fan? And look at the Treasury bill market. In the last 3 days, you take a look at the 30-day or the Treasury bill that matures at the end of this month. You could have bought that and gotten interest on it about 2 days ago for 0.03%. 0.03%. Yet, you have to now pay for that 10 times more. You have to pay 0.3. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but that is a huge thing.
I just sent that chart out, folks. This is the short paper due November 13. I sent that chart out on Bloomberg Radio Plus, and it defines a moonshot.
Kamal Sreekumar is our guest host for the hour, and he has a question for you, Steve.
Steve, the first point I would say is that you and Tom have pointed out the shortest-term bills have surged in yield in the last few days. If it goes from 3 basis points to 30 or 35 basis points, is it reflecting that you're not going to get paid on the T-bill, or does it suggest you will not have the liquidity on that specific day that you hope to get? I think it's the latter rather than the former, and I think it's one point is I'd make a distinction between the two. It ends up then being a technical default. You don't get paid on a Monday. You have to wait until Wednesday to get paid. The second thing is you talked about everybody not deciding, prioritizing how they are going to pay. But imagine the Chinese are knocking at the door, and I look back to August, September 2008. The reason why Fannie Mae, Freddie Mae, Mac was supposed to have been rescued was because the Chinese had lots of investments.
Well, yeah, that's a great dynamic there, Steve Bell. What about these big people that we owe money to?
Well, first of all, I don't think I agree that the first thing at the short end of the Treasury curve is going to be, as the caller said, liquidity.
Right.
And that ought to scare the heck out of everybody. If for 2 or 3 days, people who depend upon short-term treasuries find that the market is illiquid. Think about, for example, money market funds, just for one example. Now, on this question about the Chinese and the Japanese and the people who own our debt,
sure,
they are not going to be big sellers because to be big sellers reduces the value, and it's a self-defeating process for them. However, what does it mean for them showing up at the next auction?
Right.
What will they demand as the interest rate, let's say, on the 10-year note, which is about 2.6 now? Will they go back and demand the historical average of the last 50 years, which is almost 5%? How many people will bid?
This is
the problem, is not
right.
What happened in the past. It's what's going to happen in the future.
It's a big question. We got a question from a listener who has written in and says, you say the Treasury can't and won't prioritize, but that's not what happens in the real world. Companies that can't pay their bills, you know, say, well, we'll pay you next week. We'll pay our employees, make the vendors wait. Why can't the government do that?
For one simple reason. Financial engineering throughout the globe has become so extensive that for someone to not pay on time and in full a swap that he's entered into or a derivative that they've entered into, which depends upon the timely payment in full of a treasury, which underlies basically that entire transaction globally.
Right.
Okay, you tell a guy, hey, I know I'm going to pay you, but can you wait a couple of days? And he says to you, I've got $100 billion over here in yen that I've promised to somebody in Germany, and I can't wait. You're talking about broken contracts. This isn't as easy as Honeywell says to one of its suppliers, I can't pay today, wait till next week.
We got like 8 more questions, Steve, but to wrap this up, there's so much to cover here. Folks, Steve Bell, you're not a politician, I'm going to say. You're more the operations guy for politicians. Where are the moderate Republicans?
Well, you know, there are some. You talk about Bob Corker from Tennessee, who is very, very knowledgeable and very good. You've got Pryor, for example, and the Senator Pryor from Arkansas. Actually, John Boehner, whom I know well, is a moderate. Here's the problem. The moderates cannot get either the left wing or the right wing to follow them. The caucuses of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have threatened their members this way.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't stick to the tried and true and stick with us,
yeah,
we will run someone in the primary against you and fund them.
Yeah.
And that has happened in the past. It's happening right now.
Steve Bell, thank you so much.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.